Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
Welcome to another episode of the Dose of Leadership podcast, the show that brings you inspiring and educational interviews with today's most relevant and motivating leaders. Each episode is dedicated to highlight real-life leadership and influence experts who dedicate their lives to the pursuit of the truth, common sense, and courageous leadership. And now, here's your host, Richard Ryerson.
Hey, welcome to the show. So happy you're tuning in to Dose of Leadership. Great guest today, Margie Worrell, is back on the show. I say back on the show because this is actually her fourth appearance, making her the most regular guest on Dose of Leadership, and I love it. She is one of my favorite thought leaders, speakers, authors, coaches, facilitators. She's just an all-around remarkable human being, and she is definitely in her space and found her purpose. She's very good at what she does. Her four books, Find Your Courage, Stop Playing Safe, Brave, Make Your Mark, all four of those titles are highly recommended. I've read all four of them, and I've even had Make Your Mark. I took that book and had an own personal mastermind with Dose of Leadership. Margie's put me in touch with a lot of people, a lot of friends that have been in my masterminds, a lot of connections. She's just a very giving and thoughtful person, and she's an expert at what she does. Admits many times that she needed to find her courage growing up as one of seven children in rural Australia. She knows a lot about personal adversity. She's been all over the world. She's got a starting a business with four kids under five. She's been married 25 years. All of those things have taught her valuable lessons on building resilience, tenacity, challenging the norms, embracing change, embracing fear, stepping forward into the unknown. Today, she draws on her background working with Fortune 500 businesses, coaching, and using psychology to arm people with the proper mindset, the strategies, and skills essential to lead ourselves and others to much better, more effective outcomes. She is a passionate advocate for gender equality and inclusive leadership, and she targets women. She has women's workshops. In fact, she has a Live Brave weekend coming up for women I would highly recommend in late October, 25 to 27 October in Maryland, Kent Island, Maryland. You can learn more about that at her website, margieworrell.com, margieworrell.com, and click on the top banner. It says more about the Live Brave weekend. I highly recommend it to any woman out there that's looking to, again, break through some of those limiting beliefs, find your purpose, find your challenge. And Margie's just an expert at conducting these. And again, even though she is, a passionate advocate towards women in leadership, I look at her as one of my great mentors and leaders when it comes to leadership, because all this stuff is universal, right? I mean, breaking through limiting beliefs, stepping through courage, or finding courage and stepping through fear, that's all universal. But we talk about that in this episode. It is about talking about the differences between gender and how gender plays a role in leadership, some of the myths that there are. It was a great engaging conversation, as they always are, with Margie, and I hope you will find some enjoyment out of it. This show is brought to you by my friends at RSM Marketing. RSM Marketing has partnered with Dose of Leadership in this show, and if you're overwhelmed by the expanding marketing tactics, which I know most of us are in small business, then you might consider an outsourced marketing department, and that's what RSM Marketing specializes in. They take all of that pressure and that stress of marketing in today's fast-paced, ever-changing world, they take it all off your plate and they do it today. You see, because RSM employs dozens of specialists and experienced marketing directors that act as your outsourced marketing department. And it can be, you can be a small company or a large company, a market leader with thousands of employees. It doesn't matter. RSM will work with you. And because the complexity of marketing is growing exponentially, it doesn't make sense for us to hire a big marketing department, does it? I mean, why would you want to manage a large team of marketing professionals when you got someone like RSM that can take care of it for you? So you see, outsourcing allows you to gain access to a full team of specialists for one flat monthly subscription rate. And the beautiful thing is it's many times as low as the cost of a single marketing full-time employee. So if you want to learn more, schedule a meeting with my friend Mike Snyder, the managing partner at RSM. You can go to rsmconnect.com/doseofleadership. There's also a link on the post. You can go to the bottom of this post of Margie Worrell's episode and click on the RSM Dose of Leadership banner. It'll take you right to there where you can schedule a meeting with Mike and you can talk to them about getting an outsourced marketing department to help you with all of your marketing needs. All right, thanks for tuning into the show. Thank you for all the updates, the subscriptions, the reviews. The show keeps growing and growing, and I really do appreciate all you listening to the show. Now, here's the conversation with the one and only Margie Worrell here on Dose of Leadership. Margie, so excited to have you back on the show. Welcome.
No, it's great to be talking to you again, Richard.
Yeah, I think you're the, I think this is a record. I think you're the guest that's the most repeat guest I've had on the show. So I'm excited to have you back. And
I don't know. I hopefully that's a great thing.
No, so it is a
hopefully
good thing.
I'm too poor in getting my message across. So you're going to keep having me back to go, what was it you were saying?
No, you're one of my favorite guests and I enjoy talking with you. And I know we've talked about this subject before. Because, you know, I've talked to you about my daughters. I've talked to you about some of the women I've worked for in the workplace, both in the military and in civilian. And some of the best leaders I've ever worked for have been women. So I know this is a topic that's very near and dear to your heart. So what would you like to say about it?
Yeah. Well, look, you know, I work a lot with men and women in leadership roles around the world, actually. I guess I have compared to some in that I've, you know, I am Australian. I'm currently based in Asia, in Singapore. I lived in the US for 11 years and I'm constantly on planes traveling around the world. And, you know, while a lot of my work is with men and women, I've over the last 10 years found myself doing more and more in supporting women as leaders as well, because I think there's been a growing recognition of the value and importance of gender diversity and having women seated at decision-making tables. But of course, you know, the statistics speak for themselves, Richard. There is still a massive paucity of women at top tables. And, you know, women are still generally the minority. And at the higher you climb, the more that's the case. And so one of my big passions is how do we create environments and organizations and a society where women can advance into into those top tables, and one, have confidence to do so, confidence in themselves, have the capacity for it. And, you know, that once women are there, that obviously you're harnessing that diversity too, because there's obviously, we talk often about diversity and inclusion. Well, diversity is being asked to the dance. Do you have the diversity of people you need there and you want? But inclusion is being asked to dance when you get there. And so you can have someone seated at a table, but if their voice isn't being heard and they don't feel a sense of belonging and inclusion, then you're still not tapping the value that they have to bring.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, I said I opened up that some of the best leaders I've worked for have been women. But I will say, too, that some of the worst leaders I've worked for have been women, too. And I'll tell you why. And I want to see what you think of this. I know the ones who were just absolutely terrible to work with, there was this level of there was almost a chip on the shoulder type mentality. There was a idea of a level of inauthenticity where they were trying to be something that they weren't, if that makes sense. They felt mm-hmm. like they had to be one of the guys, whatever that means. And the ones that were great, where it's almost like you didn't even, like, gender wasn't even an issue, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. They just led. Yeah. And I don't know how to articulate it beyond that. So what do you think when you hear that?
Yeah, you know, that actually resonates as with some of my own experiences. Obviously, you know, women can be exceptional leaders, just as men can be. And I wanted to start out here by saying, you know, I think it's really important in this era post Me Too that we do not in any way find ourselves in a gender wars where it's about, well, you know, I actually really don't like the term the future is female, and because I feel like it sets itself like it's one or the other.
Exactly.
That there's a zero sum game and it's like, well, the women are going to dominate now and men, your time is done. And I really don't believe that. I think that ultimately it's about getting rid of the hierarchy. I think when any group dominates, then everybody is worse off. So to me, it's about partnership and collaboration and how do we all bring our best selves to the game and all of us tap in to the value that we have to bring? And so, you know, with that out the way, you know, obviously the cards have been stacked against women throughout history. You know, we have had a very patriarchal society and culture. And so women over the last 50 years, you know, as this, the feminist movement's really taken flight, you know, those women who have defied the odds and sort of broken through have often had to do so by really, you know, being like a man, you know, being very forceful, mm-hmm. being, you know, kind of ruthless. And not always, but certainly there is that archetype. And I think these days there's growing recognition that it's not about being more like a man, because men have their own innate strengths. And, you know, there's already enough men. Really, it's about embracing the feminine leadership strengths. And for women who are listening, you know, it's not about acting more like the guy. But it is about acting and behaving in ways that allow you to be effective in often environments that are still, you know, can be some industries, you know, dominated, you know, certainly in the senior levels by men, because our template for leadership is often very male. That's how we're mm-hmm. at least socially conditioned. And so what I've found is that in response to this, you know, masculine leadership template, some women can sort of puff out. You know, then they can act, you know, they don't just, you know, act like the guys. They like dial it, you know, they dial it up to 20. And obviously that can do the whole female cause a disservice, because it's like, whoa, you know, the bitchiest woman ever, you know, people ever, woman was a boss. And, you know, that whole negative stereotype can get played out. And so, you know, I think about the women who, you know, really role model what it is to be feminine and fierce, what it is to have grace and grit. You know, you think of Jacinda Ardern, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, in the wake of the terrible terrorist attack there on the mosque in Christchurch, you know, displayed extraordinary compassion and empathy, but also, you know, very quickly acted very decisively and assertively to change the gun laws in New Zealand. You know, she lacked absolutely no strength, but was also extremely sensitive. And I think that's the sort of, you know, leadership, frankly, that everyone can learn from, not just women and men, but just her very much a woman owning her femininity, but also standing very much grounded in her strength and willing to make tough decisions and make tough calls and stand up to those who would disagree with her. And so I think, you know, sometimes when I've experienced women like, you know, the kind that you were talking about, the worst bosses you'd ever had, to me it does come from a deep-seated sense of fear and insecurity. Amen. That they can't just be themselves, that they have to put on a very tough persona and wear this armory, because that's what they need to do to go into battle every day against you know, the men. And in fact, the most effective female leaders I've seen, they don't need to do that. They're not trying to prove themselves to be anything. They are just themselves.
Yeah, you know,
it
goes on both sides. You're right. You hit the nail on the head. I mean, I think it goes to the point. It all starts, and I can't blame them, the ones that were the bad bosses, is because they were coming at it from a distorted or dysfunctional view of leadership, which men do too. I mean, I think this whole idea of the kind of old style command and control type leadership is really dead. I mean, but it still is alive and well in so many pockets of the world. We see it in politics all the time. We see it in large corporations. But to me, command and control style of leadership, this old stereotype of, you know, you swoop in this larger than life figure that tended to be male, and that's how, and you slash and burn and dominate and fear and everything else. You're right. And so that if that's the plate, the template. But I do think that the opportunity that is there now, the type of leadership that is needed, the more and more that you see the effective styles of leadership, those leaders that even Jim Collins talks about in Good to Great, where the combination of an intense individual combined with a humble, teachable spirit, and where that Venn diagram intersects, that's the sweet spot. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if you're male or female, if you're leading from that space, you're unstoppable. And unfortunately, very few individuals get there because our ego takes over. You know, all of us are battling our ego. And I think that's, mm-hmm. that's the type of leadership that I talk about here on this show that I want people to get rid of, is that egoic sense of leadership where it is about the individual. And you're right. And I think this is where women can shine, because they naturally are more empathetic by nature. I mean, you look at even your own mother and how powerful and fierce and influential a mother can be. That type of leadership can be effective in any organization. What do you think when you hear that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, women are naturally, you know, caretakers. And so we kind of think of men as have these agentic traits, you know, they show a lot of agency. So it's about, let's get things done, task focused, you know, get in, you know, do the kill. Women tend to be traditionally more communal. And so those communal traits of let's take care of the group, let's ensure social harmony, those sort of traditional feminine traits are what we tend to think of when we think of women at work, and it really isn't about one or the other. They're not mutually exclusive, but as you know, there's often a double bind. When women act with agency, when they can be competitive and decisive and assertive, they can be penalized for that.
Right.
And yet when they don't act that way, and the research shows that when people are looking at women who aren't showing those traits, they go, well, I don't really know that they've got leadership potential. And so there's kind of, they're damned if they do, damned if they don't. Mind you, that said, men can face the same thing the other way too, when they display too much empathy, or a man is sad at work and, God forbid, he cry, they're penalized far more than women for showing those emotions. And so we're all hemmed in a little bit by these gender norms of what a man should, how he should act and how a woman should act. But I think to your point there, you know, it's so important for all of us to ask ourselves, you know, what does it mean for me to go to work every day with a genuine commitment to elevating those around me, to drawing on my strengths to do what I can? And you know, some of us are naturally more, you know, task focused. Some of us are more naturally more relationship focused. But we all have to have that emotional agility and that leadership agility to go backwards and forwards. You know, if you're always just on one end of the spectrum or the other, you won't always be effective. And so for women, you know, when I'm working with women and coaching women, I do a lot of programs in leadership, women's leadership development. You know, at times we have to act in ways that are uncomfortable or outside our natural behavioral repertoire. We have to be more assertive than we might want to be. We have to, you know, make that decision, take that risk, you know, address a specific behavior that we might feel is disruptive. And, you know, sometimes that's uncomfortable. But I think, you know, as I've interviewed lots of senior female leaders over the years, and, you know, they'll say, look, you can be nice and still fire someone at the same time. It's not about not being nice, throwing the baby out with the bathwater. But sometimes you have to make hard decisions. And so I think for all of us asking ourselves, you know, where is it that I'm kind of stuck in what's a comfortable place for me to be? But where is that getting in my way? And I sometimes see women being too nice for their own good, too sweet for their own good, too accommodating for their own good, don't wanting to seem needy, wanting to make sure they're taking care of everybody. And actually, you know, you need to set a boundary, you need to say no, or you need to, you know, speak up and actually, you know, push back on something that's being said.
I like that. You know, I think you're right. I mean, I think when you were talking, I was thinking about those leaders that were so great to work with and work for, and they displayed exactly what you were talking about there. They walked that line. They weren't afraid to make things, I think this is critical, they weren't afraid to make things a little uncomfortable. And what I mean by that is they didn't have to at least come across, I mean, you can, I don't know if this makes sense, but I mean, in an environment, I like an environment like that where it's almost like a professional team where the coach
does something to make the team just a little uncomfortable so that they perform better. And I don't mean intimidating, fear, or yelling, or screaming, or punishing, but it's just holding people to a higher standard. There's a level of intensity there. There's a little bit of separateness there. There's a little, but at the same time, it's loving and caring. Does that make sense? And that's why I always go back. People already get sick of me talking about this, but that's why I go back. The example I have is the Marine Corps, where it is a very loving organization, but not in the loving sense that some people might think. But it was very selfless in the sense that every leader, the successful ones, did something intentional to add value, to make that person they were leading better than they were before. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think, you know, that term love, sometimes we kind of think of love, it's all, you know, very soft and gooey. And, you know, there's as every parent would know, you know, sometimes you have to do tough love and hard love. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to me, it's the intention, it's the space you're coming from. And, you know, sometimes you have to have a difficult conversation with someone that might be very hard for them to hear, but you are doing it because you genuinely have their best interest at heart. And I know as a parent, you know, sometimes I got to make decisions my kids might just, you know, really dislike me for, but I really believe this is in their best interest longer term. And so, you know, when it comes to, you know, for women at work, I've worked with some great women leaders, and one that stands out for me is actually Kathy Kelvin. She is the CEO and the president of the United Nations Foundation. And I had the pleasure of, you know, connecting with her and doing work with her when I was living in the Washington, D.C. area, and have continued to do so now over the years. And, you know, Kathy is going to be 5 foot nothing, and small little woman who has a massive heart, really goes out of her way to support other people, has been a huge champion for me as well. But, you know, in the meantime, she's got to make tough decisions. She's leading an organization. She's got to lobby hard. She's got to push back on a lot of things, but she does it with this, you know, in this very big-hearted, genuine way. And you know that what she's fighting for is, even if she says that, even if she has to have some candid conversations at time, you know it's coming from a place of trying to serve the highest good. And, you know, we all have different styles, and it's not about one style being better than the other. You're talking about command and control. Well, you know, sometimes someone has to take command and say, right, hey, we're doing this. But by the same token, if we're always being that way, we're going to be ineffective. And by the same time, if you're always trying to lead by consensus and get everybody feeling great about the outcome, you're never going to make a decision. Sometimes you've got to just make a decision, and not everyone's going to like it. And so I think it is about finding that balance. And to me, that's what, you know, the incredible value of diversity is. Diversity in all its forms. I mean, not just gender diversity, but cultural diversity, racial diversity, age diversity, personality diversity. You know, when you've got the different people coming at things from different perspectives, you're going to get you, and people all feel equally safe. There's that psychological safety that everyone feels that their opinion is valued, and is being heard. You know, you get better quality decisions and you get better outcomes. And the research substantiates that, you know, across the board. You know, if everybody sitting around a table thinks alike, if everyone looks the same and thinks the same, you are not going to get the best quality decisions.
How do you think, I'm curious about your perspective. I mean, you talked about the Me Too movement when we opened up here. And as you know, I'm in that realm. I'm the supposedly the, I got it the easiest, better than most. I'm the average white male. I'm a middle-aged white male. So the perception is the world is laid out. There's like a club, right? Like we join the club and everybody tells me, hey, just do this. And the cities are paved with gold, and we will make sure that no women or minorities can get in, right? I mean, that's kind of like when that's the perception when I watch the news and I see this. At the same time, I need to be empathetic to that because I don't know. I try to always, I think a key part of leadership is being empathetic, trying to put yourself in somebody else's shoes. How difficult is it as a woman? I know the circles that I run around in And maybe it's just the people I surround myself in, both in corporate and in the military. I did see some of it in the military in the 90s when the Marine Corps was all male in the combat roles, and we didn't have any female pilots. We didn't have any of this. And I remember getting in some arguments with some people. I said, what's the big deal if they can do it? And there's a lot to be said about, and I remember, you know, that when I look at the military and in combat particularly, it's not an equal opportunity provider. You want to make sure that you're introducing the most effective, cohesive combat fighting team. And it's not to say that a woman couldn't do it, but the argument was, well, look, we're not trying to, when you introduce a woman, then you introduce all kind of weirdness and the sexuality thing, and it's just a distraction. How difficult is it for a woman like yourself? I mean, are you still getting harassed? Are you finding it difficult to work up? You know, because these are things that I just don't experience. And so this, like, again, the circles I run into, and I'm kind of rambling this, but the circles I run into is I don't see a lot of my contemporaries and my peers harassing or trying to hold women back. But that doesn't say it doesn't exist. So speak to me from your perspective. How difficult is it today, even in 2019, for you to walk into a room and not have those harassing gender stereotypes thrown at you?
Yeah, well, that's a you've raised so many different points there. You know, for me personally, I'm extremely comfortable walking into a room with, and it could be you know, majority male, and that's okay for me. And I don't, very rarely do I feel harassed. Every now and again, I've had, you know, an off-color remark made, and maybe it's because I'm, you know, not young anymore. You know, I kind of, seriously, I look at someone, I'm like, seriously, you just said that? Like, ridiculous thing to say. I mean, I hope you're embarrassed by that, because I don't get offended, to be honest. It would take a lot to offend me. I more look at people and go, I can't believe you just made that, you know, really, really inappropriate remark. Occasionally I have that, but it doesn't offend me. It doesn't even upset me. Frankly, I find it sort of amusing and think, look, this poor person's been living in a cave for a long time.
Right.
So it takes a lot for me to feel in any way intimidated. To be honest, I can't even think when I felt that last. That said, I have never, frankly, I have, while I have definitely been on the receiving end of numerous unwanted advances over the years, I think maybe it's just growing up in a big family with lots of brothers, I've never felt like, oh, gee, this is, I'm feeling really harassed by it. I've more just thought, oh, for God's sake, shut up and stop being so ridiculous. That said, you know, I know there are women who do find themselves feeling harassed and feeling still like they are being objectified. And I think that's, you know, that there is still a way to go. You know, I still know that exists in schools and in colleges and in workplaces. And something you said earlier when we started this conversation, where you'd work for some bosses, the great female bosses you'd had, you know, it wasn't about them being a female. They sort of didn't define themselves, well, I'm a girl, you know, or I'm a woman. And I think that probably is how I feel too. You know, I get up on stage and speak in front of 1,000 men in an audience sometimes, and there's 100 women in the audience. And, you know, I'm just on stage sharing my expertise. Exactly. Yes, I'm a woman, but I'm not defined by the fact that I'm a woman speaker. I'm someone on stage with expertise, and I share that expertise. And I think, frankly, there's a massive power that comes from show up, add value, do your job, and don't be defined by your gender as you do that. Yes, you know, own whatever you are, your sexuality, your gender, but don't be, that's not your defining feature. That's just, I have brown hair as well. And it's not like, you don't use that to how you think of me. Think of me as an expert in this, or think of me as a leader, someone who gets the job done, someone who leads a team, or, you know, whatever the case may be, for those who are listening. And I think there is still a way to go. And I think post me, but frankly, the Me Too movement really was a rally cry, obviously, around the world collectively from women saying, that's it. We're not tolerating this anymore. Previously felt we had to tolerate this. Obviously, you know, in Hollywood, you know, you want to get the movie, you've got to, you know, you felt like women had to tolerate, frankly, being treated with a complete and utter lack of respect. But I think, you know, the tides are changing, and I think women are more and more empowered. And I would say to women, you know, stand your ground. And when you sense it coming, saying, hey, come on, cut it out. You know, don't get all offended by it. Just say, cut it out. You know, and I think men are increasingly mindful of you know, just what they're saying, that they think twice about what they're saying before they say it. That said, I do think the pendulum has swung too far the other way. And I talk to men who go, look, I'm too scared to meet a woman now for coffee. I'm too scared to close the door. I'm too scared to touch her and pat her on the back if she's had a rough day. I'm too, you know, like there's this fear now of doing something that could be perceived as harassment. I'm hoping that with time, you know, we'll find this happy medium again, because I don't think we want to set up this situation where men are too afraid to do anything or connect with women in a way that's affectionate or just warm and friendly, because for fear of being accused of, you know, an unwanted advance. That to me is a shame if that happens. And I know that that actually has been happening in some quarters. You know, you hear men saying, I'm too scared to mentor a woman now in case it's, you know, perceived the wrong way. So I think for women, we have to make sure that, you know, we can have healthy working relationships with men that are friendly, and, you know, we don't cut out all banter. That's fun. You know, it's fun. You know, I enjoy the company of men. You know, it doesn't have to be this thing where we you know, whoa, what is that about? Is that, you know, some sexual overtone right. or overlay to it?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's the point. And that was kind of where I was going with my long-winded question.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you're right. It has swung a little bit and it's certainly there. And like I tell my daughters, and particularly my two oldest ones are in their teens, there's this kind of defensiveness about them. And I'm like, look, I said, to me, it's, the two rules that I had a great mentor pass along to me, that the two rules to succeed is, like, you know, it's not your right to challenge, it's your obligation, which works well in the aviation community as well. But I use that with everybody. And then treat everyone with respect and tolerate disrespect from no one. It's as simple as that. Right.
Yeah.
And stand your ground. Like you said, I think if anything, anybody that is harassing or doing something nefarious, or, I mean, it's the same as bullying behavior. You call it and you shed light on it, it typically stops, right? And
And you know, and I mean, you know, that old saying, you get what you tolerate, you teach people how to treat you.
Exactly.
You know, maybe it's what I, you know, the energy I put out, but I think people might go, well, look, I'm not going to try it on because clearly right. she's not going to, I don't know. But, you know, it's like, what is the signals that you're sending out? I think we have to take responsibility too for what we're, you know, the nonverbal signals we can be sending out to, you know, and I have seen, you know, we don't, as I know, I don't like to be objectified, but, you know, I sometimes see women objectify themselves. And so, you know, if we want to not be objectified, we've got to be careful that we're not objectifying ourselves by what we, you know, what we do and what we wear and everything else, because then we're inviting that. And so, you know, that might not be a particularly politically correct statement to make, but I do think we have to take also responsibility for our part in things. I don't think it's fair to say, oh, it's only on men. I think as women, we have to treat ourselves with self-respect. We have to have our own boundaries of respect for ourselves. And I think when we have really firm boundaries about what self-respect looks like, then, you know, then that gets communicated in so many nuanced ways, spoken and unspoken, to those around us.
Yeah, well said. Well, I'm excited to talk. We could talk for hours probably about this.
You know, you've got some daughters, and I've got one daughter who's 20 at college, and she's just had her first year at college. And, you know, and it's interesting, Richard, as a parent, you know, I always say that, you know, honey, you know, no one should treat you with less than,
exactly,
you know, with less than respect. Don't tolerate that.
Mm-hmm.
And by the same token, act in a way that deserves people treating you with respect. And, you know, and really your two rules for your daughters, they're fantastic. I think that's great advice for anybody in any situation, to your point.
Yeah. And I think for me as a man and as a father, I'm always telling my daughters, and I see it in them. I see the limiting beliefs. I don't know if I had boys, it'd be the same way. I mean, everybody's unique, but it has been for all four of them a constant challenge of reminding them of don't get caught up in the. I mean, God, and boys are, especially in middle school, I mean, boys are horrible. They're just horrible. And I'm sure I was horrible when I was that age too. But I mean, it's just like, don't let that and that battlefield of life drive the low self-esteem, you know? And I'm constantly reminding them to, you know, don't let that affect you, you know? Be proud of who you are. I mean, be strong, be confident. You know, I want them to be fierce. I want them to go out there and kick ass, right? I want them to be unstoppable. And the biggest battle is getting past your own limiting beliefs. You know, I've really gotten into Eckhart Tolle over the last year. I don't know if you're familiar with him or if you follow him. And it is about the role. I think is everybody is wrapped up in these egocentric roles, right? I think if you can get past that, then it's unstoppable. The world is your oyster at that point.
And you know, I think, you know, in line with that, you know, we have these beliefs about who we are and who we're not, and our beliefs are shaped by you know, the way we're socially conditioned. You know, I'm a girl, so that means this, or I'm a guy, right, so that means this. And so who would you be, I often say, you know, to people regardless of gender, who would you be without that belief? If you didn't think, well, I'm a girl, so I have to be this way, or I'm a boy, I have to be tough. So boys are socially conditioned that, you know, weakness, don't show weakness. Exactly. And men, being a man is all about showing strength. And so they armor up and they're Mr. Tough, you know. But if you didn't think you had to be strong, then who would you be? And for a woman, if you didn't think you had to be sweet or nice or modest or humble, who would you be? But I know myself, you know, I grew up in a very, you know, rural Australia. My, you know, very boys worked outside on the farm, girls stayed in the kitchen and made cakes, you know, and what have you. And for me, I had no female role models of women who were, you know, power brokers and change agents and leaders. My mother was pretty diminutive, to be honest. And so for me, you know, coming out of the gates, you know, leaving home, going to university and fending for myself in, you know, at 18. And I had no conception of a woman being a powerful agent or a leader in an organization or the world, to be honest. Margaret Thatcher was it, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes for women, we sometimes, you know, you can't be what you can't see. And while we have far more, I mean, just look at, you know, the Congress today in the US, there's a lot more women, you know, it's fantastic to see that shift and change. But I think for women, you know, there often is that much more doubt. And I know in my own work, it's why I run my women's weekends, my Live Brave women's weekends. I see so many women doubt themselves too much and back themselves too little.
Yeah.
And sell themselves too short. And I see it again and again. And I know I recognize it because I've experienced it. Right. And I really have to work hard myself to go, no, own your value. Do not talk yourself down. Take the compliment. Put yourself forward, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, really celebrate your strengths. Don't say, oh, well, I just got lucky, you know, it was a team effort. You know, no, I worked hard. I'm good at this. And women tend to struggle doing that in ways that I find men don't struggle as much.
I agree. And I think that's the focus and the work that still needs to be done. I agree with you. And I appreciate that people like you are out there doing that, you know, waving that flag and saying, hey, you know, at the end of the day, all of us struggle with it. And I think it's important for women to know that too. And I think when women understand that men have those same limiting beliefs and doubt, it may be because, we have over the years, culturally and societally, it makes it a little easier for us to get over because I've got more examples to model myself after. But man, I'm with you 100%. There are tons of examples of women out there who are making a mark, making life significant, making the planet better than they found it. And I'm just same thing with my daughters. I want people to embrace it because there's no better time. You know, that's the thing. It's like, I think, you know, looking back at the history, just to give the perspective to see where you've come from, but man, there's no better time in history than now because that's all you have is right?
I really believe there is no better time to be a woman.
I agree. And
I see the change even from when I was 20, I think how much things have changed in the last 20, 30 years. And it's an exciting time of opportunity, but there's still, I believe, yes, there needs to be systemic changes, and yes, we need to have flexible workplaces that take care of the dual roles that women often have in terms of wanting to be, there with kids and everything. And for men too, men need that flexibility as well. It's not just about women. But I do think it's so important at that individual level. How do we reframe how we see ourselves so that we can become, lead from within, be change agents, starting with changing, our own relationship to power and influence, and seeing ourselves as women who are able to influence change, and that each of us are gifted in our own ways to make our own mark. And I think so often we sell ourselves short, we reject ourselves, we stop ourselves stepping out the gates before anyone else ever can. And so hence why, I just feel particularly called and passionate about really emboldening women to step into their own power as change agents. And I think that the world would be a better place if we had more women seated at top decision-making tables, because, even the research shows, Richard, that when more women sit at peacemaking tables, more peace accords are forged, peace lasts longer. Women do bring a lot to the decision-making processes. And as I said, it's not about being better than, but it is about the synergy that's created when you do bring the full diversity of what, our humanity has to offer.
I agree. And I'm looking forward to it. I think it's a great time to be alive, despite all the, that's why I don't watch that much news anymore, because it's so negative. But there's so much positivity out there. There's so much things changing, and there's so much opportunity, particularly for women now than ever before. Yeah. And I'm glad you're out there leading the cause. This is definitely your purpose. This is your calling. And I'm glad that you're playing in that sweet spot, because the world needs it. And I know so many people, both men and women, particularly women, are better for it because of you. Yeah. And that's why I'm a big fan of what you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. No, yeah. I appreciate it. And yeah, I must just do a little plug for my Live Brave Women's Weekend that I'm hosting in late October, just outside Washington, D.C. too. So for any women who might be listening who would just love a chance to just a weekend to just stop and reconnect with the boldest vision for your life and look at the stories that are getting in your way and the fears that are getting in your way, I invite you to check it out.
Yeah, and I know one of my friends and clients is actually attending in October, so I'll be looking forward to see what they say after that's over. So how can people find more about that? Is it your website?
They can just go to margiewarrell.com, but I also have a URL set up just for the weekend as well, which is just livebraveweekend.com. So, yeah, you can either go to my website or go to livebraveweekend.com.
Okay, and if you're listening to this and you haven't visited my website, you can find all those links on the post, on this interview post. So, Margie, as always, great conversation. I'm so glad you came back on the show, and thanks for coming on.
Oh, thanks so much, Richard. You take care.
Richard invites you to become a part of the Dose of Leadership community. Visit doseofleadership.com and sign up to receive his free Common Sense Leadership ebook, a guide that highlights how all of us can learn to become calm, confident, consistent, and courageous in all aspects of our lives. Richard is also available as a speaker for your next event. Richard specializes in practical leadership and change management. He has a philosophy of inspiring everyone to think and act like a leader, which is based on timeless natural principles and common sense. You can get more info by visiting doseofleadership.com.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.